जनयन् मारयन् मृत्युनान्तकम् सोऽनन्तोऽन्तःकरकालो नादिर् आदिकृत् अव्ययः जनं जनेन जनयन् मारयन् मृत्युनान्तकम्
are created through the agency of the Father and killed through the agency of death, but he is perpetually free from birth and death. purport by Srila Prabhupada. The supreme authority and inconceivable power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be minutely studied from this verse. He is always unlimited. That means he has no creation or end. He is, however, death in the form of time. As described in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I am death. I take away everything at the end of life. Eternal time is also without beginning, but it is the creator of all creatures. The example is given of touchstone, which creates many valuable stones and jewels, but does not decrease in power. Similarly, creation occurs many times. Everything is maintained, and after a time, everything is annihilated. But the original creator, the Supreme Lord, remains untouched and undiminished in power. The secondary creation is made by Brahma, but Brahma is created by the Supreme Godhead. Lord Shiva annihilates the whole creation, but at the end he is also annihilated by Vishnu. Lord Vishnu remains. Vedic hymns. In the Vedic hymns it is stated that in the beginning there's only Vishnu, and he alone remains at the end. Then in the paragraph, Prabhupada gives some example. An example can help us to understand the inconceivable potency of the Supreme Lord. In recent history of warfare, the Supreme Personality of God had created a Hitler, and before that a Napoleon Bonaparte, and they each killed many living entities in war. But in the end, Bonaparte and Hitler were also killed. People are still very much interested in writing and reading books about Hitler and Bonaparte, and how they killed so many people in war. Year after year, many books are published for public reading regarding Hitler's killing thousands of Jews in confinement. But no one is researching who killed Hitler and who created such a gigantic killer of human beings. Nice instruction here. The devotees of the Lord are not much interested in the study of the flickering history of the world. They are interested only in Him who is the original creator, maintainer, and annihilator. That is the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement. End of purport. Nice acoustics here. You hear everything. So, the sequence of four classes specific on specific topics is over. This is going back to where the discussion was before. So I'd like to just do a little background of, like, the storyline of what this is leading into, what leads into this, and what the message is conveying. The previous chapter is Dhruva fighting the Yakshas, because the Yakshas killed his stepbrother, Anupam. And when Anupam was killed by the Yakshas in the forest, Dhruva once again showed his Kshatriya spirit and went into the forest to find the capital of Alakapuri and destroy the Yakshas for having killed his brother. in a big battle. And the brahmanas came and reminded Dhruva, when he saw this big mystic display of so many terrible demons and dragons and raining of pus and blood and stones and mountains, and he had become bewildered. But because he's Dhruva Maharaj, just by the words of the brahmanas reminding him that he is a great devotee of the Personality of Godhead, and surely the Personality of Godhead will protect you. He'll give you the means. Just take courage. Don't become bewildered by the illusory energy. So this chapter begins, hearing those words, immediately Dhruva fixed his mind, which is very powerful, upon the Personality of Godhead, and he then drew his bow and fixed upon the bow one arrow, one very powerful arrow, and immediately the whole mystic display disappeared. And from that arrow, many other arrows, even before he fired the arrow, many other mystical arrows came shooting from that arrow and killed so many of the yakshas, and they were taken aback, the power of Dhruva. But then they were also kshatriyas, so they grabbed their weapons and raised their weapons and went charging at Dhruva in mass. Dhruva, being very expert, he immediately engaged in combat and destroyed the entire army of the yakshas. And he didn't stop. He kept killing more and more and more and more and more. And Swayambhuva Manu came to understand this terrible battle that's going on. And Dhruva, because the relationship between Swayambhuva Manu and Dhruva is, Dhruva is his grandson. Because the father of Dhruva is Uttanapada, and the father of Uttanapada is Swayambhuva Manu. So he went to correct his grandson. My dear boy, this isn't correct. This is excessive anger. Now, we know from Prabhupada's teaching that in order to fight, as Arjuna had to fight, or a kshatriya may have to fight, there has to be anger. So, although a great personality controls anger, they must use anger in appropriate circumstances. Kshatriyas must use anger in appropriate circumstances, so Prabhupada teaches. Krishna was inciting Arjuna to anger, appropriately used. So the opposite is happening here. Swayambhuva Manu is saying, your anger is inappropriately being used. It doesn't behoove a sadhu, even a kshatriya sadhu, it's not proper. The reason that it's not proper is, specifically, so many innocent persons to take proper action because your brother has been killed, to take proper action because your brother has been killed, that's religious. But you're over the top. This is no longer religious because so many innocent persons are being killed. Stop. And because he's Dhruva, he's stopped just by those words of Swayambhuva Manu. So the section that we're reading is, that's the storyline. The section that we're reading is a little Sankhya section where Swayambhuva Manu is explaining the role of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in acts that are otherwise not understandable, or when one becomes bewildered by the action of the material energy, in that state of bewilderment, one forgets the ultimate cause, one forgets Krishna. And rather, one gets absorbed in the immediate circumstances. And that's what happened to Dhruva. His brother was killed. He reacted. He lost sight of the personality of Godhead. As elevated as Dhruva is, what to speak of ourselves, He lost sight of the personality of Godhead. And acting according to dharma or theistic conduct, he stepped outside of that and was just controlled by anger. No good. So to help Dhruva and to help us stay fixed, the purpose of Sankhya is to help us become fixed upon an understanding of that which is eternal and ultimately the supreme eternal, and ultimately the control of the personality of Godhead and our submission to the control of the personality of Godhead. In and of itself, just analyzing cause and effect, because that's what Sankhya is, literally means counting. So there's places in our scripture where we have Sankhya philosophy. Sankhya philosophy is to help us discern basically what's what. What's matter, what's spirit, and the controller of both. What's the purpose of Sankhya? Just like in Kapila's teaching of Sankhya. Through knowledge is, to a degree, detachment. So Dhruva needs a degree of detachment here. But the higher principle is to fix his mind upon the personality of Godhead. Essentially, it's don't. There's a do and a don't. Fix your mind upon the personality of Godhead and do not blame the immediate cause. So there's the remote cause. In the language of Swayambhuva Manu, going back just a couple of verses, he uses the term nimitta matram, just like we have in Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna is being instructed by Krishna to be nimitta matram bhavya savya sachin. So in text 19, Swayambhuva Manu is speaking of the personality of Godhead as nimitta matram, in the sense that he's the remote cause. And as the remote cause, he's inducing everything to happen, although he does nothing. And as the remote cause, he indicates through his time energy. This directly leads into this verse also. Time energy is mentioned. So through his time energy, the interactions of the three modes of material nature can take place. Of course, the living entity is also required. The striving of the living entity, or the abhyasa, the effort of the living entity, the exercising of the will of the living entity is necessary. But time is also necessary, and the modes of nature, when in contact with time and the living entity and the karma that living entity carries, then things start to happen. And as things start to happen, what Swayambhuva Manu wants Dhruva to do is keep your mind fixed upon the personality of Godhead as things start to happen, like the death of your brother. Material nature is interacting according to the modes of nature. It appears that this remote cause is the killer, but he is not. It appears that he is acting, but he is not. All this is happening by the Lord's inconceivable potency. Achintya Shakti is the language here. Or Vibhakta Viryaha in the language of text 18. The divided varieties of energies are acting, just like Krishna indicates in Bhagavad Gita. The living entity should not consider himself to be the cause of action, nor should he consider himself to be the cause of the result of action, nor should he consider that he's inducing others to act. Akarchitvam nakarmani lokashastrajate prabhu. Rather, all this is being carried out by material nature. So, material nature is the instrument of the action of the action of material nature upon the living entities, the sequence of events. Krishna is the remote cause. So essentially what Swami Bhuvamanu is saying, he's going to come to that conclusion, don't oppose the sanction of Krishna. When the Yakshas killed your brother, that was sinful. And you're a king, and to punish that sinful act, that's theistic conduct. There's a proper use of power and strength for a kshatriya when it's according to the codes of Dharma. But what you're doing is not according to the codes of Dharma. It's very improper. And so you're wrong. As they were punishable for an act of killing your brother, you're punishable for the act of killing so many innocent persons outside of the codes of Dharma. And the sanctioner is the personality of Godhead. So the Dorvibhavya is the word in the previous verse. The tiny brain of the living entity cannot possibly conceive of this. How actions in the material energy are working by the energies of the Supreme Lord. In Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writing, he outlines how the inconceivable energies of the Lord work. It's a very nice... When Bhaktivinoda Thakur was doing his Namahatta preaching, or his village preaching, taking the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to the villages of West Bengal, he did in a very unique way. He did because the people were not able to read, he composed songs. And through the medium of songs, then they could hear the song again and again and understand the song and understand the teachings of Lord Chaitanya through songs. And then he had little question-answer sessions. Very much like so much of his writing, like Jiva Dharma, question-answer sessions, where the teachings of Lord Chaitanya were presented by the elder of the village who could read, and then he would instruct those who couldn't read by this question-answer method, and really, really simple. I've spent some time studying those some time ago. And very, 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 very simple follow. A statement was made, and a question about the statement that led to an answer that led to another question. In describing the inconceivable energies, one of the questions is, well, this all seems very understandable. So why is it that the energies of the Lord are called inconceivable. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur's answer is, when we describe in this way, it's understandable. But when the energies of the Lord are mixing and practically acting under His direction, one cannot discern how it is acting, and therefore we say inconceivable. That is to say, we become bewildered by the action of His energies. Unless there's surrender unto the personality of Godhead, and when there's surrender unto the personality of Godhead, that deluding feature doesn't act. So these statements are taken from the scripture of how the inconceivable energies of the Lord can be conceived. But when they're acting upon the living entity, they become inconceivable in part and largely because our remembrance of the source or the remote cause behind them is lost. And therefore, now in the beginning of this purport, Prabhupada is saying, in this verse, we can understand the inconceivable power of the Supreme Lord minutely. In the presentation, it's paradoxical. Just like in Upanishadic language, he walks, but he does not walk. He's very near, but he is very far away as well. He is within everything, but he is outside of everything. Sometimes called Upanishadic double talk. It's paradoxical. But the Bhagavatam here is helping us unpack that so that we can understand. So there's I'll just go through them very quickly because of time. Four seemingly opposite, contradictory statements. But if one understands the position of the Lord as the source of everything, who's beyond the influence of that which He's the source of, then it's not so difficult to understand. He's acting through His energy, starting with time energy that was mentioned in the previous verse. So, in the form of time, He's the killer of everything, but He is ever existing, which means He's not killed. He who is the killer of everything through the agency of His time is never killed, but He's not the killer either, because it's through the agency of Kala Shakti. He has no beginning, although He is the beginning of everything. Anadi Adi Govinda. Nor is He ever exhaustible, although everything is exhausted in due course of time. His energies, this is Shakti Parinamvad. This is the doctrine of Vyasadeva, where the energies of the Lord are simply transforming. The energies are also eternal, as the Lord is eternal. He's inexhaustible. He's never destroyed, but His energies are always exhaustible, or in their particular configuration, changing, 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 changing. And He's unchanging. Even His energies are changing. And the fourth is the living entities are created through the agency of the Father, and He's the Father. Living entities are created through the agency of the Father and killed through the agency of death. So death is time, represented in the form of time, destroys everything. So He is the Father and He is the Destroyer. But He is perpetually free from birth and death. He is not destroyed. And for that matter, from the previous verse also, through the agency of His energies, things are born and are maintained and destroyed. But He does nothing. It's all remote. In the first canto, Bhagavatam, when Bhishma Dev is pacifying Maharaj Yudhisthira, he's describing that Krishna is, he compares him to the wind. And whereas the wind blows, the wind causes the friction of the bamboos, and the friction of the bamboos makes sparks, and the spark falls on the fire, and the fire on dry leaves, and then there's fire. But the wind doesn't start a fire. So Krishna is compared to the wind in that place. He's the cause in a remote sense, but he didn't fight in the battle. He came to destroy the demons, but he didn't even fight. Of course, in Vrindavan he fought and killed different demons. But in the part that Yudhisthira was involved with, Krishna didn't fight, but he was the cause. So if Krishna is the cause of the Kurukshetra battle, Yudhisthira, what is there for lamenting? And the application here is, Dhruva, your brother was killed. Understand that behind your brother being killed, there's a sanction of the Supreme Lord. Now, for that particular misuse of free will of those who did that wrong act, they are to be punished, but the whole Yaksha race is not to be punished. And your acting in this way is in direct, not only forgetfulness of the personality of Godhead, but not acknowledging his position as the remote cause, the one who sanctioned this to happen. So don't do that. Understand the position of the Supreme Personality in Godhead. Act theistically and always remember the Personality in Godhead. This is our instruction taken from this section. Scriptural instruction. I'll finish with this. Just as Lord Brahma, circumstance was very different in the Sri Brahma Samhita. He asks the question, same type of circumstance. After he's completed the wonderful prayers, he is fixed upon the personality of Godhead, just as Dhruva, fixed upon the personality of Godhead. Like, you know, if we could ever become so fixed upon the personality of Godhead as Dhruva, we would be perfected devotees. Brahma, after that, expressed to Lord Vishnu, I have this doubt or concern. The concern is, I have the desire to create. I have this creative impetus that you've given to me, and I want to create a universe. Like we may want to do something, like build a temple or distribute books or do something for Krishna. Whatever that something might be. His doubt was, this act of creating universe, it's material. Like Dhruva, the act of protecting as a kshatriya, it's material. Or whatever the activities in this world that we may do, in one sense we look at them and it's material. So what's the protection? What's to protect me from the onslaught of the material energy? And the answer that Lord Vishnu gives right in Brahma Samhita is the same as what Swayambhuva Manu is indicating here. If you fix your mind upon the personality of Godhead, specifically through the joining of your activity with the direct hearing and chanting, in our case, hearing and chanting, or direct sadhana bhakti, and do that activity all the while for the personality of Godhead's purpose, then the activity itself can serve to be as liberating as the direct activities of bhakti. Join those activities. Bhakti Siddhanta's word is dovetail. Join those activities for the purpose of satisfying the personality of Godhead. then they can be as liberating as the direct devotional practices can be. So in this material world, it's risky. That's the path of elevation. But in doing so, if there's inattentiveness, it's like the razor's edge example. A little inattentiveness in this very, very expert instrument, excellent instrument, can cut instead of shave. And then there's blood, the big mess. So it's our responsibility as devotees to follow these instructions very carefully and not be inattentive even moment to moment, because the instrument is very sharp. The remembrance of Krishna, some challenging situation may be there that we're facing in our devotional service. We all know what challenging situations look like, difficult. Just involving ourselves with the material energy is difficult. But through good association, like Swayambhuva Manu, if one nice devotee comes and taps us on the shoulder and says, "Prabhu, don't forget Krishna. Seems that you may be caught in the modes of nature a bit here, and you've forgotten Krishna. And connect your activity to pleasing Krishna. And don't forget the proper practices of sadhana done in a nice way." Essentially, that's what Swayambhuva Manu was doing. And just by that reminder, immediately Dhruva is back in the right position. He stops his inappropriate action. So I'm going to be obedient to the timekeeper and giving me the signal I have to end. I want to thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Gopemanandi.